Greetings, I'm James Gillen, your host. We've got a great show for you. We've got Giles Campbell on, and he's had some amazing experiences, and he's coming at it from a very scientific background. So we're going to go interdimensional today and bring on Giles, and I don't want to waste a lot of time with the intro, but I just want to bring Giles on. So Giles, are you with us?
I am, James. How are you going?
Oh, great. It's great to be talking with you again and see your smiling face. And I wish you were back at the ranch here fixing fences and putting in ditches like we did before. That was great.
Oh, that's right. Slave labor.
Yeah. It's good to have a couple slaves.
Absolutely.
I think I'm the biggest slave here on the planet. I mean, on the ranch right now, as far as...
We've all got our cross to bear, I guess.
Yeah, I'm my own personal slave.
Yeah.
But, I never have anybody do anything I wouldn't do myself here. So I usually get out and clean toilets and dig ditches and do everything else along with everyone
Absolutely.
Else. But, I wanted to, just give us a quick, glimpse, basically of some idea of who you are and what you do for a living.
Well, I guess going right back, fairly rocky childhood and stuff, and I managed to drag myself out of a bit of a nightmare back then and put myself through college and university. I got a degree in zoology, and then I got my master's in biodiversity and conservation genetics. Mm-hmm. And then I did a bit of traveling around the world, ended up in Australia eventually about 12 years ago, and I started work with the Australian Government Scientific Organisation, which is the CSIRO. And ended up in genetics over there, and I worked with DNA vaccines, mostly in fish. And then I went on to what was called the Dauntless Carp Project, working there, which was basically genetically modifying fish. So they only had male offspring. And this the reason we did this was to try and create a line of fish that would eventually breed themselves into extinction. It was all a pest control sort of theory that we had going on there. Mm-hmm. And I was in that position for 4 years after 5 years with the vaccine projects.
Mm-hmm. So, you have a really good scientific background and a real solid footing, in the scientific community.
Yeah, I've spent quite a bit of time with the scientific community, and I don't know if you heard about the GM salmon that's been developed over here in the States. Because I was working with salmon with the vaccine, we kind of interacted with those guys quite a bit. So I understand the genetics behind it all and the scientific theory and why we do these things. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Frankenfish that they're getting ready to
yeah, that's right.
put out there. That's going to eat everything out of house and home.
Yep.
Yeah. I'd love to talk about some of the experiences that you had that kind of seemed to completely redirect your life and maybe go back to when these first started happening.
Yeah, okay. Well, from the first solid experience that I remember was when I was around, I think I was probably about 18, 19 years old, and I was actually driving my dad's car. He was asleep in the passenger seat, and I was driving his car from the south of England up to the north, and I saw what looked, for all intents and purposes, to be a cigar-shaped object, probably about a mile in length, hovering over a group of trees near, not too far off the road. And this was a busy highway, and I looked at it, and obviously I'm driving, and I had to look back at the road, and I was like, what on earth? And I looked back, and it's still there. And I was like, what was weird was that the roads were full of cars and nobody was stopping to have a look at this thing. And then I looked back to the road again and I looked back and it had vanished, like it just wasn't there anymore. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking to myself, maybe, it was a momentary hallucination and, you explain these things away to yourself. Maybe I imagined it and whatever. And my dad was fast asleep next to me and I didn't wake him up. So I just kind of let that go.
Mm-hmm.
And... And then I'd see the occasional strange light in the sky, but, I put it down to satellites, even though they would be, making turns and twists every now and then, often with friends or associates at university and stuff. And this wasn't something that happened regularly. It was just every now and then. And I'm 38 now, and about about 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago now, I had my first really bizarre experience when I was living in Tasmania at the time. My father was visiting from the UK, and we'd actually spent the weekend or a long weekend fishing up in the Central Highlands at a place called Arthur's Lake. We were staying in a place called Blue Lake Lodge, and the weather had been foul. It had been snowing and cold. This is, you know, kind of east, and the weather's supposed to be the best, but you know how these things work. And we didn't do much fishing, and eventually after a couple of days, we decided to call it a day, and we jumped in the car and we headed down from the Highlands back into Hobart, which is about an hour and a half, two-hour drive. And we were coming down the hills, and I'll just give you an idea where we are. We're in a single lane highway that's coming down from the Central Highlands in Tasmania, and we're coming towards a town called Bothwell, which is a very rural community, very small population. And we're about 15 minutes away from Bothwell, and all of a sudden I notice this big white light following sort of up in the quarter light of my car, just behind me and to my right. We're driving on the opposite side of the road, remember? So it's just behind me and to my right.
Mm-hmm.
And I pointed out to my dad, and he looks at this thing and goes, "That's very strange." And it followed us for a while, and it was a really strange light. It was like this. It was very bright, but it wasn't illuminating anything underneath it. It was a really odd kind of self-contained blue-white light. And we're traveling at about 100 kilometers an hour, and it's what I reckon is probably 200 feet away from the vehicle and off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it followed us for, 10, 15 minutes. And then I asked my dad if I could pull the car over and see what it was. And my dad freaked out and said, no, he didn't want me to stop the car. In fact, could I go any faster? And I'm towing the boat behind the back of the car. And I'm going, no, go any faster. Can we stop and have a look? And he's going, no way. I don't, just keep going. I'll keep watching it. You drive, I'll watch it. And the motorbike comes around the corner in the opposite direction. It's about 11 o'clock at night or something. And This motorbike comes in the opposite direction, and as soon as it starts heading towards them, we can see the lights of this motorbike. This light on our right-hand side just blinks out, just disappears. And my dad starts to calm down a little bit and goes, it's gone, whatever it was, it's gone. And we just carried on driving, and this motorbike comes past us in the opposite direction and disappears up the road and around the corner. And as soon as the motorbike's out of sight, bing, this light switches back on.
Yeah.
That shits himself. Like, he just starts, a little bit and goes ahead and said, look, we need to pull over and see what this thing is. And he's just like, no, don't you dare stop. And so we just carried on going, and this thing followed us for probably another 5-10 minutes just as we're coming into the town of Bothwell. And then then it just sort of shoots off over the top of the car. I didn't see it disappear because I'm driving, and my dad just says to me, look, it's gone. It just shot off over the top of us, at a rate of knots. And it was gone. So that was probably that was 5 or 6 years ago, and that was probably my first really strange experience, really odd kind of experience where I had a witness, and there was something reasonably close, and I couldn't explain it away, really. Like, there was not, my dad was telling me that maybe some farmer had a pulley system set up, and he was, and this is typical of a skeptic, like any kind of excuse or explanation for it that's not paranormal or something that we don't understand. He came up with radio-controlled aeroplanes with a big bright light on it, and pulley system, and somebody trying to pull our legs, so, which I actually found quite comical. But,
blinking on and off wouldn't fit that, for it to just turn off its light.
Neither would following you for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That's like...
Yeah, exactly.
Quite distance, and that would be some serious pulley system. Anyway, that was probably my first solid experience. And then moving on, maybe a year or so after that, I started having dreams that I was being taken out of my bed and taken to places, strange rooms and stuff like that. But they were always really, really very cloudy dreams, and I'd wake up feeling like I'd run a marathon or something, like absolutely exhausted. I never had any of these markings that people talk about, like these puncture marks or scoop marks or anything like that. I never ever saw anything like that on me, and I dismissed them as sort of interesting dreams, until one night I I woke up, and next to the television in the bedroom, I could see this sort of this grey black kind of shape, which was about 3.5 foot tall, I guess. I couldn't make out any features on it. I just knew that there was something there, and I could see this shadow like it was masked from me. It was really weird. And then the next thing I know, it's like I'm being given a general anaesthetic, and I wake up in this room, and in this room, it's like this whole room has this like mother of pearl kind of effect to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole room is molded, like there's no edges or there's no sharp edges or anything on it. It's like it's been poured into a mold and made, and there's these little 3.5 foot things around me. Again, I can't see them, just like black shadows, but I know that they're there. And I'm laying on this bed, which doesn't have legs. It's actually sticking out of the wall, like it's just been molded out of the wall. It's really weird. And I jump, and I remember getting off this bed and walking down this ramp and with these shadowy things around me. And they're trying to usher me somewhere. And I actually remember thinking how amusing it is that you're trying to move me because, you know, I'm 6 foot one and these things are like, you know. And I just remember laughing at the fact that their physical presence was quite amusing.
Yeah.
Seeing I'm unconscious, then I'm in this other room, and then I'm unconscious again, and I wake up in my bed, and I wake up, and all of a sudden, I'm no longer finding this an amusing experience. I'm kind of a little bit concerned. So I roll over and I wake my partner up, who, before I actually explain what happened to me, she says to me, "I've just had the strangest dream." And I'm like, "Well, that shit, I woke up this morning," and I forget, it was 2:30 a.m. when I woke up, and I know that because I had the alarm clock next to me. And she's like, "I woke up in the early hours this morning, and there was this 3.5 foot creature standing in the corner of the room by the television, exactly where I'd seen it." And just keeping in mind that I hadn't told her about my dream, she then goes on to explain this creature that's kind of got this grey, almost elephant-like skin about it,
mm-hmm.
quite wrinkly, but not really wrinkly, but with these big black eyes. And she said she was looking at it for a couple of minutes and couldn't figure out what it was. And then she said, and I started to worry and panic because I was uncomfortable because I couldn't move or anything. And she said, and then I got this voice in my head, like a thought that wasn't my thought, but she said it felt like it was coming from this thing. And it said, "Look, don't worry. We're not here for you. We're here for him."
Uh-huh.
And then she said, and immediately she's like, she's been giving a general anesthetic and she goes to sleep again. So This was the first time that I really thought to myself, "Hey, hang on a minute, this is too coincidental. You know, I haven't told this person what I've just seen and what I've been through, and yet she's woken up and seen something that's very similar to me in the same place." She actually saw the being that I didn't see.
Uh-huh. And then
after that, for probably 2 years in this particular house, it was like the house was haunted. There'd be lights being switched on and off. My smoke alarm would go off at 2:30 a.m. regularly. Like, I changed the smoke alarm, and it was hardwired. It wasn't like the battery, hardwired into mains electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Smoke alarm in the hall, which was the same, which would never go off. And so I swapped them, and they're on the same circuit. So I swapped them round to see what would happen. And the one that I took from the bedroom wouldn't go off in the hallway, but the one that I took from the hallway would start going off again in the bedroom at 2:30 a.m.
Hmm.
Remote controls would go missing. Like, it was just bizarre. I mean, this is not constant, like every now and then, you know. And the smoke alarm actually was quite consistent. That would probably be every 1 or 2 weeks that would go off at 2:30 a.m. on the dot, which was just weird.
Well, the smoke alarms have a system, it seems like, where they have these little wires or whatever you want to call it in there that something has to jump the gap, you know, between the wires, like the smoke or whatever sends them off, and it seems like extra energy, any kind of extra energy that comes into the room actually sets those off. It seems to be a common occurrence. We've had times where we've had people who are channeling and things like that, would the energy would come into the room and all of a sudden the smoke detectors would all go off, and like you're saying, a lot of other crazy things would be going on. So a lot of electrical malfunctions and things of that nature. So it's pretty common for that to happen.
And the TV would switch itself on every now and then as well.
Yeah.
And even if you were watching it, and I fell asleep with it, then the volume would start going up and down. It was just...
Yeah. And radios, too. You know, I have a room that the radio just goes on arbitrarily all the time by itself.
Yeah, no, this is a phenomenon that was sort of recurring, you know, in the house. And, you know, we used to laugh and just say, oh, the house must be haunted, and we'd kind of flip it off and ignore it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so after a couple of years, and these dreams had kind of come and go, and then we moved to another property. I really wanted to move out of suburbia and get out into the countryside and have a bit of isolation and peace and quiet. And, you know, and all this time I'm working with the CSIRO. And it was a couple of years later that I remember, so this is about 3 years ago now,
mm-hmm.
I was sitting at work, and all of a sudden I get this voice in my head that's like, you need to go home to bed. And it's like 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And without really questioning this feeling or this thought, I packed up my laptop, I said goodbye to everyone at work and said, look, I'm tired, I'm going home, jumped in my car and got halfway home. And I'm like, hang on a minute, what am I doing? What am I doing here? I like suddenly, what am I doing going home at this time of day? Because I was actually supposed to be working later that evening because I had work backed up. And anyway, I just kind of went with it and went home and fed my animals. I was in bed by 7:30 in the evening, and I'm just straight to sleep, like completely fast asleep. And I woke up, and on the left hand side is my alarm clock. And it says 2:32 or something a.m. And I was like, oh, really? That's interesting. And then suddenly I noticed that I can't move. All I can move is my head slightly and my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
My bedroom, in fact, not just my bedroom, but my entire house is full of this really bizarre blue light. Like it was like something that you'd see in a movie, man. It was really, really weird. Like it was a lovely blue. It was a lovely color, okay. and in amongst it all, there were these white lights floating around. Like it was lit, man. It was really like something out of Star Trek or something. It was really weird.
Yeah.
And my whole house is full of it, and I can see. And whilst I'm looking through it, I'm looking around my room because I'm being very. Is this a dream? This is what I'm asking myself. I'm dreaming this, and I'm being very careful about looking around my room at specific details. And, like, my room is exactly how I left it. My jeans are on the floor. My socks are there. There's a DVD sitting halfway off my DVD player that I took out the night before, and my curtains are drawn. And, you know, I'm looking around. I'm being very vigilant about this, and I'm like, no, I'm awake, and this is actually happening. Or what the hell is it? And then I get this kind of – it's like an awareness of what's happening. I don't know whether it's a familiarity, like it's something that I remember, or whether it's just I'm aware of what's occurring, and I'm like, oh, goodness me, there are things here that I've not experienced, or I don't remember, and I don't really know what they are. And then as I'm starting to get some idea of what's going on, I start seeing these black shadowy things appear in the hallway just outside my bedroom, which is slightly open. And I can see these things sort of appearing and moving towards my bedroom. And again, then I get this general anesthetic feeling like I'm falling asleep and I can't fight it. And and then I slip into unconsciousness again. And I have no recollection of what happens from that point on. Until I wake up again at 3:15, I look over to the first thing I do when I open my eyes again is look at my clock, and it says 3:15. Now, what's weird is this blue light's still there with these white lights in it, but it's nowhere near as strong. Like it's fading.
Yeah.
And I'm having this sort of internal dialogue with something where I'm saying, it's really unfair that you do this to me, but you don't let me see you. And then I get this kind of look, you're not ready to see us, like it's not something that you're going to be comfortable with. And I'm saying, no, language, but in my head I'm saying, no, fuck you, if you're doing this to me, it's only fair you let me see who you are.
Yeah.
And I get this kind of look, it's not, you're not going to be comfortable with it. And I'm like, I don't give a rat's, look, this is, you know, show me who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I get this kind of urge to look over to my bedroom window, and you know, and keep in mind that I'm on a second, I'm in a two-story house.
Yeah,
bedroom's up on the, you know, on the top, on the top floor, and I look over to my right, and out of my bedroom window, I've still got this blue light inside, but it's fading, and outside of my bedroom window, I see this face, and it's very big, roundish kind of head with brownish kind of skin, very wrinkly, and so wrinkly that I couldn't make out whether there would be a nose or a mouth in any of that. And these big round black eyes, not these almond shaped black eyes you hear about, but these big round black eyes, mm-hmm. different from my partner saw, because she saw this grey skin thing which had these kind of big almond eyes.
Yeah.
And it was just stood. It was just outside my window staring at me, and I probably looked at it for maybe 30 seconds or so, which seemed like an eternity, until I started to freak out, because suddenly I became aware of this thing was actually pretty ugly. And I started to freak out, and then I get this sort of this kind of idea, this thing in my head going, I told you, or we told you, or something like that. And then it just disappeared. Like, it literally just vanishes, just disappears in front of my very eyes, and then this light just eventually fades away to nothing, and then it's like I'm being given this general anesthetic, and I fall unconscious again, and I wake up at 4:30 a.m. which is obviously a bit later, absolutely exhausted and wondering what the hell that was all about. So the following week after that, I was very strange. Like, everything was very strange around me. Like, I would your connection to everything, like trees, mountains, dogs, cats, birds, butterflies, bees, people, and people's emotions. Like, I could feel people's emotions as they're near me, and it would be exhausting. And it was quite difficult to deal with for a while. And then about, I guess, 10 days after that experience, maybe a week after that experience, again, I'm at home, and both of these occasions, my partner's away at work, and about 10 days later, I go to bed, and I have this other experience where I wake up with, like, I'm consciously awake, but I can't open my eyes, and I see this strobing, like this double flash strobing white light in my head, and I'm laying in bed going, oh God, I'm having a seizure. Subscription, and I can't move my body, and I can't open my eyes. How am I going to deal with this? I'm not going to be able to call anybody or tell anybody that I'm having a problem. And this is how awake I was, and how, you know, how consciously sort of observing what was happening with my eyes closed. And I wasn't scared, but I was like, how am I going to deal with this if I can't move and I can't open my eyes? And eventually, I open my eyes, and there's this flat light that seems to be in my room, but it's like in the middle of my head as well at the same time, and I can't for the life of me figure it out. And I'm looking around my bedroom again, making sure I'm awake, and I can move my head a little bit at this point. And then I turn over to my right-hand side, and there's this 4.5-foot taller translucent, I don't know what to call it, like it's got a big sort of oval-shaped head, wide at the top and narrow at the bottom, and these massive black wraparound eyes. I mean, they're huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see, you know, it had what looked like two fleshy antennae on the top of it, which were translucent also. I could see blood vessels, or what would appear to be blood vessels, under the skin of this thing, and I could see its skeleton, which was almost like a... like an opaque kind of glass underneath it. It had very long arms, so long I couldn't see the hands on it because they were bent almost like an insect type joints on the arms.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just staring at me. And I mean, it's only a few, maybe 2 feet away from my face, just looking straight at me. And in what looked like these blood vessels, I could see what looked like little beads of light moving around in these vessels. And when I first saw it, I panicked, and then I actually managed to calm my breathing down and my heart rate. This is how aware I was at the time. I managed to slow my breathing down. I managed to slow my heart rate down so I wasn't panicking, and I just sat and I observed this thing for minutes. Didn't move, just sat there and stared at me, and whatever it was doing, it wasn't going until it had finished. And then, and I remember consciously, after looking at this thing, actually managing to speak, which was quite an effort, actually, just to talk. And I remember all I could come up with was, "Hey, how are you going? Are you good? Can I help you?" or something like that.
Yeah.
And shortly after I spoke, the damn thing just disappeared. One of these flashes of light, like there was another one of these strobe flashes of white light, and it just vanished. I then got this massive urge to fall asleep again, which I didn't do. I managed to pull myself up in my bed and stay awake until I got the use of my legs and my arms back properly. And then I jumped out of bed and looked where it was standing and looked through the window to see if there's anything outside, and didn't see anything at all. And then again, after this experience, I had this connection thing to everything around me. But the one thing that was really very obvious was I couldn't stand my job. I'd go to work and I'd be around these people that were fretting and panting about work and stressed about this kind of stuff, and just all of a sudden none of it made any sense to me at all. And that was a really defining sort of moment for me, I think. I suddenly realised that this, you know, this 9-to-5 thing that we're in is really not important. This stuff that's happening to people is real, and these things are actually coming to us. I mean, this is, you know, for me, it suddenly became a really very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like there was some kind of transference of consciousness and energy or a heightened sensitivity that came with these contacts.
Definitely a heightened sensitivity, to the point where I didn't want to be near people because I found their emotions and their thoughts and stuff to be quite intrusive of me. Like, they was difficult for me to be around them. And also there was this weird energy thing as well. Like, I just felt like I was going to explode the whole time. Like, I was just going to, just burst. And, you know, I remember looking at a butterfly one day shortly after these things, walking through the park, and it was like all of a sudden I was in the butterfly and knew what it was like to be a butterfly.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a shaman dream, or, you know, what they do is where they will step into an animal, you know, and look through the animal's eyes and feel what it's like to be that animal.
And that's exactly what it was like. But it was like that with trees and dogs and people and mountains and, you know, anything that was natural. It was so bizarre. And I went to see a doctor and I said, "Look, this is going on with me. What's going on?" And they sent me for brain scans and this, that and the other, and they couldn't find anything wrong with me. And then shortly after that, I came down with what I guess they class as chronic fatigue syndrome, where I was sick for probably, I think, very difficult to do anything, and I occasionally managed to get out with friends and go camping for a few days, which was probably which made me feel better than anything, just getting away from work and all of that kind of stuff. And during these trips, we would see lights in the sky, you know, flashes of light, and then these little silver, like what looked like apple seeds, would just come shooting out of them. And this isn't just me on my own, this is me with two or three people. And then the last big sort of sighting I had with friends after these what you would call visitations, I guess, was again up at Arthur's Lake where we were fishing, and this great big white light came flying over the top of us just after I'd been having a conversation with my friend Simon about these things and my mate Harry from New Zealand who'd come over to visit. And I turned around to my friend Simon, who was at the time taking a leak behind a tree, and said, "Mate, what would you do if a big white light just came over the top of us and illuminated this whole area like a football pitch?" Because we were in this opening of trees, and it's about 11 o'clock at night. And at the moment I shut my mouth, this great big ball of white light just comes over the top of us and illuminates the whole area, traveling at about 5 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend stood there taking a leak by this tree with his mouth wide open. I'm sitting there with a big smile on my face looking at this light going, "What the hell is going on?" You know, like this, all this stuff is happening in such a short space. My friend Harry's kind of just sitting there motionless. You know, he was cooking the sausage on the fire or something at the time. And then this thing splits, disappears over the light. It lights the whole lake up as it goes over. It was bizarre. And in my head, I'd put it down to a meteorite or whatever. And yeah, and like I say, after all these experiences, work became very difficult for me, and relationship became very difficult for me too, because I became more interested in this stuff and what was happening with me, and much less interested in society and, you know, the social consciousness that people talk about. And
Did you get a sense of what these entities had in mind, or their purpose for these experiences?
This is a strange thing. I have no idea. I didn't, like, some people say that they get given messages or they get given information and stuff like that. I didn't get anything like that. All I know is that afterwards I was a really different person, and money didn't have any interest for me anymore, and science, you know, to a certain extent, even though I still respect it greatly and there's a lot of value in it. And, but a lot of it became really quite redundant to me. And I also found that a lot of people's attitudes towards science, you know, this kind of science is the answer to everything, that kind of thing, actually became quite repulsive. I found it difficult to sit and listen to that, whereas before I was like, you know, I was in a situation where, yeah, science can answer everything. You know, I'm part of that, and, you know, and I believe in that. And all of a sudden, my worldview, I guess, was completely blown into two pieces, and I had to kind of start all over again, rebuilding myself and rebuilding what, you know, what I believe in, and how I feel about life, and you know, and where we come from, and what we're all about. And so, unfortunately, I didn't get any real idea or intention from these things, other than the fact that I know that I started to change after these experiences in a very, very specific direction. And now I'm, when I came on a bit of a trip to the USA, I was going to go on a sort of, you know, to Asia and experience that kind of culture and Buddhism and all that kind of stuff. But for some reason, I came to the States because I wanted to meet people who had similar experiences. I wanted to come to your place, and wow, did I have some experiences up there when I first got there. I mean, that place blew me away. Like, it was incredible. And yeah, and as you know, whilst I've been in the States and I've been meeting people like Stan Romanek, yourself, who have, you know, all had their own unique experiences. And this is something else that's fascinating about this, is everybody has their own unique experiences. You know, it's like nobody has exactly the same experiences. They're all very unique to the individual, which is fascinating. And, whilst I've been here, you know, I've had some other quite fascinating experiences, both at your ranch and also whilst driving a car. I had those incredible out-of-body experiences as well, which kind of blew me away and also throw a lot of questions at you.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. I noticed when you first came, you're kind of spinning around with the energy, trying to figure it all out. And then when you came here, you found out, hey, it's okay. You know, there's a lot of people having these experiences. And I was thinking about that, you know, maybe just the experience is the message, you know, rather than giving you a message, the experience itself is the message, and where you've come from and where you're at now, seems to be the message.
Yeah, well, I completely agree with you, actually, and I think that's the same for a lot of people. And you know, like, people make these bizarre kind of predictions about what's happening in 2012, and this day this is going to happen, and obviously nothing happened. And it's like, you know, prophecy is a really bad thing to get involved with. Everything changes day by day. Little energies change, and you know, and at the end of the day, what's going to happen is going to happen, and you just have to be, you know, vigilant about yourself and what's occurring with you, and what these experiences that people are having. Some people have problems with them; it becomes very traumatic. Some people get wrapped up in it to the point where they exclude the rest of their physical life, and that's actually quite dangerous, because we live here and we live now, and we live in this physical world, and we have to be able to live in this physical world. And coming to your place was sort of invaluable to me, really, because I met so many people who had so many unique experiences, and I would see people who were struggling with it. I'd see people who were going in one completely different direction to me with it. And that's, you know, and this is all part of this collection that we all are. It's just one thing that we all are. Everybody experiences things slightly differently because nobody's the same.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was absolutely incredible for me to meet all these different people with these different experiences and the different ways that they're processing what's happening to them. And, you know, then I left you guys and I went to Denver and I met Stan Romanek and I had lights in the sky and had some crazy experiences there with, you know, and I started, after being at your place, I started seeing shadows and orbs all over the place and, you know, and I still see them. And then I was driving, as you know, a car from Denver to Wyoming not so long ago to meet the guy I called Leo Sprinkle. And as I'm driving that car over the peaks there to Wyoming to see this guy from Denver, it's all of a sudden I start getting these crazy waves of energy going through me and pop, I'm out of my body and I'm seeing the planet and I feel this total unconditional love. And this is something that is completely different to any experience that I'd had before. Like, this wasn't things visiting me in my room. This wasn't lights in the sky. This was something profoundly different. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm driving a car at 60 miles an hour,
mm-hmm.
5 miles an hour, on the way to Wyoming, over the tops of these hills. I get this crazy energy, which is like, like it's just coursing through me, like it's building with intensity. And then all of a sudden, pop, everything goes black. It doesn't feel like I'm in my body anymore. I'm looking down at planet Earth. I see all these, like, pictures of faces, like different races and different people, and I feel this unbelievable and incredible unconditional love for everything on this planet. Like, it was so intense that it was actually difficult to contain and to cope with. And this went, you know, this was like, this felt like maybe a minute or maybe 30 seconds, and I had completely forgotten about the car I was in. It wasn't, for me, it didn't exist anymore. It wasn't a problem. And then, bang, I'm back in the car again. And I'm in floods of tears. And I'm actually banging the dashboard of the car going, oh, my God, what, you know, holy Jesus, what the hell was that all about, you know? Like, and there's floods of tears. I'm starting to calm down. This energy's going, but I can still feel this love. And it's like, and I think I remember, because I actually called you after these experiences because I was freaking out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what on earth is that about? And I'm trying to drive this car and I'm crying and this energy's starting to go and I feel this love, but it's this energy and this love thing is not something that you could contain and feel like in this physical form.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'd be possible to contain it without going mad, I don't think. It's like we don't have the... I don't have it. I wouldn't have the capacity or the ability to feel this thing. And when I was having this out-of-body experience, I kept getting this sort of thing like, this is who you are. Remember who you are. This is where you come from. This is who you are. And so I'm driving my car, and this is starting to fade and calm down a bit. And I'm going, oh, Jesus, what on earth was that all about? And then all of a sudden this energy starts again, and bang, pop, I'm back in this black thing, and I'm looking at the earth, and again I get this love, and along with this love feeling that I've got for everything, which is overwhelmingly amazing, like it's just unbelievable. I also see on the planet these little explosions of like little pastel colours, like blues and purples and greens and things like that, and I'm going, what the hell is this about, you know? And then I get this sense, like in my head, it's like this, you know, this is who you are, this is why we're here, this is what it looks like to us when you start to wake up. And I'm like, what are you, you know, what is this? What are you talking about? You know, and then this goes on, and then bang, I'm back in the car again, and I'm, you know, I'm borderline pulling over and stopping the vehicle. I mean, I'm floods of tears and like unbelievably incredible. It's just an incredible energy and experience. And then that kind of calms down and fades. And then I end up at Leo Sprinkle's place and I get out of my car. Like, it feels like someone's drugged me or something. Like, I'm completely out of it. And I'm trying to have this conversation with Leo Sprinkle about my visitations and stuff and to try and get some sort of clarity on it all. And I told him about my experience on the way to see him. And then he starts crying.
Yeah.
Like, dude, are you okay? And he's like, mate, this is, you know, this is where my work's been going for all these years. Thank you so much for coming and validating, you know, this, that, and the other for me. And I'm like, what? no, I'm here for you to help me. And he's like, no, no. And he's shaking my hand. He's going, no, thank you so much. This is beautiful. I love hearing this kind of stuff. And in the end, we just ended up having a chat for like 2 hours. And I didn't really do anything with him. You know, but we talked about stuff for 2 hours. And I got in my car and I drove home. And driving home from Leo's, I'm calling you going, James, what the hell is going on? I think I'm going insane. These experiences are just off the chart. And I think your response to me was, no, Giles, I think you're experiencing sanity for the first time.
Yeah.
At one point, I remember cracking up and thinking, thank God for James, you know.
Well, I always tell people the world is insane, you know. I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, out of sane. We're the ones that are insane. The world is out of sane or out of sanity.
Yeah.
And you really don't know that until you have these experiences. And then you look back and then you can't relate to the way people behave and the way they treat each other and the planet and just the social consciousness program. You just go, what was I doing? You know, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And there needs to be more people like that on the planet that, you know, are going to question the emperor, you know, when he's naked.
Well, exactly right. And like you say, it's like you suddenly become so aware that it's actually not that people aren't, that most people, I don't, well, my own personal opinion is it's not that everyday people can't experience these things. It's just that they're so close to it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess in some way I always wanted to have, you know, something else, understand something about life. I've always questioned that it's not, you know, that it's not as simple as a rock, you know, rotating around a sun that's, you know, accidentally got life evolving on it. Like, it never made any sense to me anyway. Like, I remember at university doing, studying evolution, especially the evolution of man. I mean, it happened in such a rapid, you know, from apparently being apes to standing and making tools and then, you know, and then our intellect, the evolution of it just seemed, didn't make any sense to me, you know, over the time period that it was. Like, it was just such a rapid, exponential sort of growth.
Uh-huh.
And that never really made a great deal of sense to me. And society, I suppose, in the way that we have these rigorous rules and laws that we're meant to abide by. I mean, come on, what is it? We're born, we go through school, you know, through our, you know, from the age of, well, from in the UK, from the age of 4 until the age of 18, if you stay on. And then most people are expected to go to university or go out and get a job. I mean, there is no room in any of that system for personal growth and development and real, you know, like real spiritual growth. And that's what, when I say personal growth, I mean, that's what's important and that's what's really lacking in society. And it's something that I ignored in myself for a very long period of time. And a lot of people I know avoid it on purpose. They don't want to know. They don't believe that there's anything else. You know, they want a nice, simple kind of structure to their life. And I actually find that it's a little bit quite sad to see people like that.
Oh, but boring.
Anything else, you know, that's what that people are programmed to believe. They get into their car, they do their 9-to-5 job, they're worried about their mortgage, they're worried about the kids, they're worried about food on their plate, they're worried about their money and their overdrafts. There is no room for anything beyond that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is sad that, and then you meet some of these people and they really, in a way, they think they've got it all and they know it all. And but you can't instill want into another person or get them to take a look at their life, you know, and realize that the universe is much bigger than this little personality body ego program that we have going. And, you know, it's kind of tough. You know, one thing I just noticed, I'd love to get your take on it. This Bigfoot thing that's going on with this Dr. Ketchum and some Russian scientists as well. They got over 100 samples of Bigfoot. And back in the early 80s, I wrote about Bigfoot and said it was part of the human experience that evolved in nature. And it's part of the, you know, it's a very extremely advanced, intelligent creature, but it's just evolved in nature. And it has abilities that some shamans, you know, that that live in the jungles and things like that can also do, you know, like shapeshift or appear and disappear or things like that. So it's quite interesting because I've had my own experiences around that, and it just got validated that they, from the samples that were very controlled, you know, some of them were very clean samples, that this creature, or whatever you want to call it, is part of the human experience, and it has human DNA as well as some other odd DNA along with the human DNA.
Well, I guess, from my perspective, I mean, I've never seen Bigfoot, and it's funny though, but I've never found myself dismissing its existence.
Uh-huh.
Purely because, you know, when thousands of people see things, and okay, some people will go out their way to hoax something.
Yeah.
And because they want attention or they want to do something amusing and, you know, or whatever. I mean, these things, you know, hoaxes are there. But yeah. I wouldn't invalidate the existence.
Yeah, when you have that many credible witnesses, the American Academy of Science did a study on Bigfoot, and they had a very long list of questions that they asked people. And it was everything from, you know, do you wear glasses? Are you on medication? Very like psychiatric evaluation questions, things like that. And then they asked to give descriptions, you know, of what they saw. And some of these people were like doctors, psychologists, things like that, that had, you know, sightings. There's a university professor here that is a psychologist that saw one, and now he's doing everything he can to prove it's real. But he still thinks it's this dumb ape. But this dumb ape has outsmarted him every time. I mean, they put fruit out, you know, for this supposedly dumb ape. And they have all these sensors and cameras and infrared sensors, everything out there, you know, all this high-tech equipment. And supposedly this dumb ape grabs the fruit every time, and they come back with nothing, you know. And they don't know how it happened or how it did it, but they don't really understand the true nature of what Bigfoot is. If they did, they would understand why, you know. There's a saying here in the Native American elders. They said, you know, if you go chasing Bigfoot, you're never going to find him. But if he wants to find you, he will.
Sure.
And so it's all about consciousness. It's all about if you're in the right consciousness, they'll allow you to see them. But these are some extremely advanced beings that are not dumb apes. They have human genetics as well as living in the wild. They're very stealthy, and they seem to be able to appear and disappear at will, which really upsets a lot of the researchers when you bring this information out.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things that people have to be really careful of is labeling something dumb or stupid when they don't understand it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we have a habit of doing that all the time, because something doesn't behave the way that we behave. It has to be dumb or stupid. And that's, you know, and that's...
Yeah,
it's quite amusing that we put our own intellect up there when we've screwed this planet to the point of no return, you know, and we've overpopulated it, and we still burn fossil fuels and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I sometimes look at our own species and wonder who's the more stupid.
Yeah. Also,
the chimpanzees that are swinging through the trees and living in this kind of equanimous kind of state with the rest of nature. So that's kind of difficult as far as things coming in and out of existence in our reality and our dimensions concerned. I mean, it's completely possible, totally feasible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've I've had these experiences now, and you know, had you asked me 6 months ago, I would have probably gone, no, mate, it's...
yeah.
And now I'm kind of like, hang on a minute, I've seen things come into my room and disappear in front of my eyes, and I've had these crazy out-of-body experiences whilst driving a car, and, you know, and it's almost like... You go to a place and time doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what we experience in this physical form is one thing, and we've labeled time as a, you know, very linear thing. Yet, how can I be driving a car, have an experience that seems to last, you know, for a period of time, be back in my car and still be driving my car without, and still be in the same lane?
Yeah.
Because to me, physically, I guess the experience was a blink of an eye. Whereas what I actually perceived was something that was drawn out with information, and I'm watching a film. You know, it's like it doesn't compute in my mind in this reality. So to say that something can't shift in and out of dimensions, I guess, or come at will or disappear at will, just because we can't do it doesn't necessarily mean that something else can't.
Yeah, exactly. I had experience. I told people once that I was walking. I was just going for a walk, and then all of a sudden I just got really spaced out, and the next step I almost fell because I went out of body, and then I had all these amazing experiences, and then they put me back at the exact same time, and you know, in a half step to where the next step I was a little off center when I came back in. But I started having recollections of what happened, and they said, you know, you're at school for 2 weeks. they told me I was being trained in something. I don't remember exactly. I do remember going to school and meeting a lot of people and things like that. I don't remember the curriculum, but they said that I was actually at almost like this intergalactic seminar type thing for 2 weeks, and then they put me back without even missing a step.
Well, this is, I guess this is what, you know, our Aboriginals would describe as dream time and things like that. Like this, this happened, it's happened to me. And like I said to you, 5 years ago, I would have, or 6 years ago, I would have probably told you that UFOs were mostly imaginary and ETs were, you know, a figment of people's imaginations. Mm-hmm. But it, unfortunately, it takes for me, not for some people, but for me, it took direct experience.
Yeah, and there's nothing like that. I have to totally commend you, a person of your wisdom and your credentials, actually coming forth after having these experiences is quite a journey, and it's also quite a blessing for it to allow other people to kind of come out of the closet, you know, that are in positions of power or hold, you know, high credentials and things like that, to come out and say, hey, you know, there's a lot more than we're told, a lot more than we're taught, a lot more of the universe, and it's time to maybe open ourselves up to, you know, the grander universe in which we live.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I know there are medical doctors and, as you say, psychologists and psychiatrists and, you know, all people of all walks of life having these experiences. And what's fascinating now is, you know, from the people I talk to who have been in this research for years, what they seem to be talking about now is that it's not adults that are really having, I mean, some adults are having these experiences, but what they seem to be doing is experiencing these things with their children, in the way that their children are coming to them and they're saying, I was on this ship and I was taught this last night and I'm taught these things. And these are, you know, medical doctors, psychiatrists, what have you, and normal people, you know, and they're saying, what is going on with my children? And then there's all these kids that are being diagnosed with ADD and ADHD, and most of that's probably just because they're bored out of their brain, and schools aren't particularly exciting. I remember thinking school was the dullest shit, and I would have been diagnosed as ADHD when I was a kid. I was always out the classroom. I was always in detention. You know, I was in trouble all the time because I just didn't give a monkey's about education. It was boring. And, you know, I was a kid and I wanted to do kid stuff and learn kid things. So, but what do? We pour drugs down these children's, you know, mouth to calm them down and sit in class and be a good person. That's something that, you know, I find quite offensive. And it is a shame. It is a shame that we have to, I mean, it's a shame that I had to have experiences to open up to it and start looking into it with some, you know, with some degree of kind of open-mindedness. But what is fascinating, James, is when I was having these experiences, I was quite happy to talk about it at work with, you know, some very high-level scientists in the organization or in the particular group that I was working within, which was genetics and molecular biology. And some of them, even the very skeptical people, even the very skeptical ones, and there's some very intelligent people out there that, you know, really don't want to believe in it. And I remember talking to a guy called Stan, who was my line manager and one of the people that I respected most within the scientific community that I was working in. Very open-minded, very intelligent, you know, spiritual in the way that he built his own house and grows his own vegetables, and, you know, he's kind of a bit of a hippie, but doesn't believe in, you know, this paranormal, well, doesn't believe anybody, holds it at arm's length. And I said, well, you know, I was talking to him about it, and he would sit and listen to me fine, without judging or without, you know, without calling me a lunatic or without wanting to fire me or anything. So once I started talking about it in amongst the group, I actually noticed the majority of people wanted to hear about it. Uh-huh. And there were some people that would look at me and go, you're nuts. you know, you're crazy. This doesn't happen at all. You know, life is, you know, life is this very structured and physical thing. What you're talking, you obviously need to take medication or something.
Yeah.
But some of them were very open-minded. But I remember asking Stan, I was like, wouldn't you want to meet them? Like, if they were there, wouldn't you want to meet them? And he looked straight, and he looked me right in the eye, and he said, no, not really. And I'm like, why not? And he's like, I think I shit myself.
Yeah. On that note, we're almost out of time. The, you know, it's funny, the, I think it's interesting, you know, in physics, you know, almost all the physicists, I should say, believe in at least 11 dimensions out there, but yeah. They keep demanding physical proof for non-physical events when it does fit into their physics. But, you know, to me, that's kind of like illogical, and a lot of these things are repeatable. There's multiple witnesses that have similar stories. You know, there's residual things that can be measured at times. You know, there's a lot of evidence, you know, that, you know, even with the photos and the video out there, I know some of that's hoax too, but I mean, there's just so much evidence out there. I'm blown away that, you know, people with, supposedly, you know, kind of a high intellect or whatever can still dismiss the fact that, you know, we live in a multidimensional universe and it just may be inhabited.
Well, obviously everything fits a niche somewhere, doesn't it? And just inhabit this. And another, you will notice generally in the population, people are very focused on certain aspects
yeah.
of their life. And in this particular reality, that it's difficult to come across people that have a real broad spectrum and a real open mind. And people that do have that open mind and do look at life with a far broader view, they're the ones that you tend to find had these experiences or seen things that are strange, and they question a lot of stuff that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, could you imagine if we realized that we were just, you know, that our physical bodies were just part of what we really are? You know, that there's much more to life than what we are here, right, in this physical reality. Everything would change.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if for a moment, if you could just think, if everybody knew that they were eternal, if we are, if everybody knew that they were eternal beings, everything on this planet would be completely different. People wouldn't be panicking to fit everything into this 60-year kind of gap that we have.
Also, too, realizing that, you know, there's a unified field in which everything's connected and everything's in constant communication. Absolutely. You know, if you're aware of it, if you choose not to be aware of it, then it isn't real for you. But, you know, when we just apply the sciences, you know, that the wisdom that we do know from science to our civilization, we would take a quantum leap in evolution.
Absolutely. And, you know, and if you're aware that everything's connected and that on this other level, that you're talking about doing harm and being, you know, and feeling emotional pain and all these kind of things would suddenly kind of diminish, I think.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. We've definitely got to start paying attention to, you know, our own science, you know, and start applying that, you know, as well as get back into the heart and things will turn around. You know, we've hit the end of the hour, unfortunately. You know, I can't thank you enough for sharing your experience and coming on the show, and hopefully this will be, make it possible for others, you know, in the scientific community to come out and talk about their stories.
Well, just, you know, all I can say is people be open, talk about experiences you've had. Don't be afraid, because I've been doing it since I've had them, and, you know, nothing negative has happened to me. In fact, it's been a wonderful journey since. So, you know, thank you for the time, James, and thank you for letting me share this. And also thank you for the valuable time that you've allowed me to share with you up at the ranch, because that in itself was a big release for me. Thank you.
Awesome. Hey, well, let's definitely stay in touch. We're out of time, folks. This is James Gillen signing off. Have a great day.